about 10 years ago, Ray Stalker came to talk to me and he said, you know, my shock tubes can't go any faster, they've reached their speed limit. Why don't you start looking about making them going faster, you know? The T4 shock tube is what's called a reflected shock tube. You heat the gas through a shock wave, it gets to the end of a tube where it stops, all the energy stored in heat, you then get that back to velocity by expanding it through a small hole in the nozzle. To go faster, you need to get that stagnant, you need to put more energy into that stagnant layer of gas, which then gets hotter. Because things radiate in a very non-linear temperature manner, it turns out above about 6 or 7 kilometers per second, which is just suborbital, it's not fast enough to get into space, you can't go any faster because you lose all the heat by radiation. So we were talking to Ray about how we might do this, and of course what you've got to do is get away from this stagnation region stuff. Don't have a reflected shock tube. You can cascade shock tubes in series, and with never stopping the gas, you can continue to add more energy and go faster. So me and Ray discussed that for a while, and he said, yeah, it'll be easy, go ahead and do it. 10 years later, I can tell you that Ray Stalker is a lying bastard. It wasn't easy. It turned my hair grey, and there are other deteriorations in performance I don't want to talk about. But anyway, he was right in one regard. It did work. We were able to go faster. This is a schematic of the latest shock tube we've just built. We call them expansion tubes, in fact. It basically has the same sort of principle of compressing helium gas for the driver upstream to create the high pressure, high temperature stuff which drives the shock tube. And there's a cascade of tubes in series leading to flow speeds up to about 15 kilometers per second and flow durations of the order of 10 microseconds up to sort of half a millisecond, that sort of time scale. I won't dwell too much on the principles of its operation other than to explain a simple analogy which covers the difference between reflected shock tubes and these expansion tubes. If you look at a reflected shock tube, it's equivalent to if you had a car, say, without an engine and you want to get it going fast, you can get all your students to push it up the top of a hill very slowly. When they let it roll down, they get all that energy back at once, and you can get the car going quite fast. If you want to go faster, you've got to find a bigger hill, go faster and faster. Eventually, you reach the biggest hill around. That's it. And that's what's happened to T4, or reflected shock tubes. They're getting as hot as they can get, all that energy stored there. There's no way of going any faster. So what we do in the expansion tube is we take two cars up the hill instead of one. They both roll down together. When they get to the bottom, those two cars both have the same speed as the individual car would have had on its own. So you get all your students in the back car to push like hell on the car in front. And if they do it just right, the rear car stops, the front car goes on with twice the momentum, four times the energy, and that's all fine. You can go a lot faster. The problem is, of course, you have to throw one car away. So that effectively means, in shock tube language, you throw away half your test gas. So the test times in these sort of devices are much smaller, because effectively you throw away most of your test gas. And the factor isn't 2 to 1, it's more like 10 to 1. We get about 10% of the test time. But we do go very fast. Okay, this is just a picture of our latest expansion tube, X3. These are some of the sort of models we're testing in it. Why do we want to do it? It's for looking at when you go beyond Earth, you go out to Mars or Jupiter or somewhere like that, you come back with orbital velocity, you know, speeds in excess of orbital, and it's a very different game. Things behave differently. This is an example of some data from some tests we did for Jet Propulsion Laboratory on towed aerobrakes. On the horizontal axis here, we have the velocity. Remember, orbital speed's about here. Above here we have altitude. These sort of coloured bands here are funny things that happen when you fly. The red thing is oxygen dissociates. Blue is nitrogen dissociating. Go real fast, your flow ionizes and radiation starts coming into play, and that makes a very big difference as to how you can fly. So you can see shock tubes run out of steam around about here, and the expansion tube envelope is able to continue. In fact, I think it can go a long way. It's about over there somewhere. And so that's briefly how we can get these new test conditions for flight. Some of the things we don't know, you come back as an aerobrake, you need to make it very, very blunt, because that's the efficient way to stop things. If it's blunt, all your force is on the front surface, your weight behind it, it's a stability problem. So we need to look at stability of flows. You're up in the upper reaches of the atmosphere, it's not sort of continuum. You can always count the molecules one by one as they come. Things behave very differently in those sort of circumstances. We need to be able to scale that sort of flow. We don't know how the chemistry behaves. The radiant heat transfer is not well understood. Simple radiation laws are known, but not non-equilibrium at very high temperatures. And the temperatures really are big. You can get up to sort of 10 times the temperature of the sun behind the bow shocks of these high energy flows. It's just unbelievably hot. Everything's non-equilibrium, but basic physical things aren't understood. I mean, you can write a code to model it, but no one really knows what numbers to put in the code, so we need this data to prove it.